You are now listening to the Two Dads Run podcast, just two dads who run, talking about running and being dads and some other stuff.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. My name is Gray.
This is Kevin.
And we are your hosts for the Two Dads Run podcast. Guys, we're really excited about today's episode because for the first time since March, so episode two, we are now on episode 15. We have an in-person guest. And not only is he sitting right across from me, he literally does this for a living. He is the host of the OG on 99.9 The Fan, as well as the 919 Beer Podcast. It is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Joe Ovius. How are you today, Joe?
Good. Thanks for having me out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming out. And so understand you're a runner.
I mean, you can call it
that. It's a somewhat new development, right?
Yeah. So I mean, you guys want the full story?
Well, yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear it. Because there's a lot of people out there that have been listening and they're like, I want to get into running and I want to get into triathlon, but I'm scared. So I think your story will be a motivational story.
I can tell you right now, you're not getting me to do a triathlon. I'm just going to put that right out there right now. So look, growing up in South Florida, I played baseball. That was my sport of choice, but I was also fat. Like, I was a fat kid. And when I went to NC State, I was probably at my heaviest between 1997 and 01. I think I pushed to like 235, like size 40 pants. Okay. I was a big boy.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of that had to do with the fact with I liked eating, and I also didn't like doing too much running either. I tried, you know, like my dad told me, like if you want to get good at baseball, if you actually want to be able to extend what should be a double into an actual double rather than hoofing it to first base and maybe even getting thrown out from outfield, you're going to have to lose some weight and you're going to have to build some stamina. So I took that to heart, obviously. Because I really was into baseball. But dude, I hated it. I mean, I remember running. I mean, it's Boca Raton, Florida. I mean, it's flat streets. Like, I'm not running any hills. It's flat all the time, all that stuff. And I hated it. I tried running with music. I tried all sorts of, you know, the things that you're supposed to do to kind of like, you know, waiting for the runner's high, all that stuff. Never actually happened. I gave it up and I never touched it again. So fast forward to, you know, and I've had friends who have been into running. You know, like my friend Anita has always been into running and she's always tried to get me to do it. My wife and I would make fun of the people who just got all into it. And I just was like, yeah, whatever, it's never going to happen. So fast forward to 2018, I'm doing the beer podcast with Adam Eschbaugh and Wayne Holt. And I heard about this beer mile. Okay. And the guy Jason at FS Series runs this beer mile at Bond Brothers every year.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, that can't be that hard. And they're like, well,
famous last words.
Well, they're like, well, no. Like, you got to drink four beers and you got to run a mile, right? For those who are unfamiliar with the beer mile, there's officially sanctioned ones and there's world records and all that stuff, but this is a casual thing. But ultimately, you pound a beer, run a quarter mile, do it four times, okay? So I thought this is perfect for content, okay? The company that I work for, Capital Broadcasting, is always looking for ways to kind of push boundaries on digital content, you know, doing goofy things. Plus, with radio, full disclosure, sometimes you got to do some stunts to get attention,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So I thought the beer mile would be a perfect content thing. Here I am. I'm not a runner, but I drink beer. How hard can this be?
So it's only a quarter mile, right?
Right. So
before you get to your next beer.
So I committed to do the beer mile in May of 2018, that January. And I thought to myself, okay, well, let me use this as motivation to at least get ramped up to run a mile. So I went to a local middle school track and I decided to start. Let me test myself. Let's see how fast I can run a quarter mile. I felt like ass. Like, I could not do it. My lungs were in pain. My legs are jelly. And I'm like, and you know, it's one of these things where
we're not laughing at it. Seriously.
No.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. So but again, and this is me, and, you know, I've lost weight. I'm eating better, all that stuff. But in terms of actual running, no, I mean, I'm starting cold at approaching 39 years old in 2018. I turned 39 that March. So I said, all right, well, you know what? I don't want to embarrass myself, so I'm going to keep doing this. So I get out there, the quarter mile turned into half mile, half mile turned into the 3/4 mile. And then that turned into a full mile, right? Like, okay, got this track down. Let me see if I can run my neighborhood. Now I live over in North Hills. If you're familiar with North Hills in Raleigh, it's called that for a reason. There's nothing really flat there. So I decided to run up my street and I was like, holy crap, I clearly have more to do. But I thought to myself, like, okay, well, if I can run a mile in the hills,
yeah,
well, then I'll be
tracks flat, right? Man,
tracks flat. It's like taking, I'll use my baseball terms here. All right, I'll take the batting donut off.
Yeah,
right. If I just got to run a flat thing, what's the big deal? So that then turned into being able to run a mile in my neighborhood in the hills. I'm like, okay, well, I got to what I thought was a comfortable point. It's like March, it's like April, and that's when I decided, all right, let me try to push this to 2 miles. You know, 2 miles turns into 3 miles. And it didn't occur to me then what was happening, but I was, in retrospect, what was happening was becoming part of my routine. I started feeling better about it. Like after I'd go for a run, after I got past the whole, I feel like death, I was like, oh, okay, I got a little bit more energy later in the day. I'm not feeling sluggish, that kind of stuff. Get to the actual beer mile. And I set a goal that I would do it in 10 minutes or less.
Okay.
So, I mean, I could drink beer pretty fast.
Yeah. So that's where I would struggle, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the thing is, there are faster beer chuggers out there. I'm not a great beer chugger, but I can drink pretty fast. Like Eshbaugh from the beer podcast, that dude can, like, the beer just disappears. I don't know where it goes. It's like a magic trick, right?
Yeah, those people, just it's incredible.
So I do this beer mile, and I'm not kidding when I'm not just saying this to say it. I did it in exactly 10 minutes. Okay.
Wow.
And if you don't believe me, the video is on WRLSportsFan.com right now. Like, right. Again, because I did this for content. So my guy Glenn, who helped with a lot of video projects that I was kicking around, he went out there and he filmed it. I had the GoPro on, all that stuff. And it turned out, you know, turned out pretty good. I mean, like the video itself looked pretty freaking good. And I did it in 10 minutes. And you can see it in the video, like as I'm approaching the finish line and I can see that I'm about to, like, oh, I better pick up the pace here. You know, the adrenaline kicks in and all this stuff. It actually happened. Like that whole runner's high crap.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is going to happen. My body's taking over. Like, I just felt like this sensation of like, damn it, I'm going to freaking do this.
Yeah.
And you can see in the video, like I actually start to act like I just won a freaking World Series, you know, like I'm fist pumping, I'm doing all this other stupid stuff. And it was probably my greatest athletic achievement until the next one, which we'll get to in a second. So got done with the beer mile, didn't puke.
I was just about to ask if there was puke involved.
No, there was no. Okay. No,
what kind of beer, by the way?
So the way a beer mile typically works, typically they're going to give you something that's not as carbonated, and it also has to be of a specific ABV. I want to say it's at 5.5% or 5%. Like it can't be like a 3.5 or whatever. It actually has to have some punch to it. And depending on where you go, like Bond Brothers, that particular year they did like a Hefeweizen that day.
Ooh.
Which I don't know if that was the wisest choice, right? But that's what they did, if I remember correctly. So, it wasn't as carbonated. You also have to be very particular about which beers you're going for, right? Cause they're all in these plastic cups. Some have a little bit more foam. Some have clearly been sitting there for a while and they're flat. Maybe you want to go for that one as opposed to the one that was freshly poured.
Strategery.
There's a little strategery involved with this, right? And I did all that stuff. And again, I did it in 10 minutes. Now, what's funny about that, you know, I sat here and talked. While it was a great athletic accomplishment for me, I don't know if you're familiar with pen holderness.
Yep.
So pen holderness, for the people who are listening who might not be familiar, is an old local television sports anchor who transitioned to being an anchor, and then he got out of the business and he made parody videos with his wife and he went viral and all that
super
stuff.
Super viral, yeah.
He's also a freaking Ken doll. Okay. No, I'm
Ken doll.
He's a Ken doll.
Very handsome.
He is a handsome man. He is a handsome man, tall, incredibly in shape. He's like a CrossFit bro, all that stuff. Yes, I said that. First rule of CrossFit, talk about CrossFit. So so Penn lapped my ass on this beer because he ran the same one as me. He lapped me And like in the video that was edited out, but if you look at the raw GoPro footage, you can hear me cursing him out. It was humiliating that this guy was lapping me in the beer mile. He did it like in 6 minutes.
Wow.
Like 6 minutes. It's insane.
That's pretty solid.
That's Penn though. Yeah. Like he's just one of these dudes who's blessed to do that. And if he hears this, he knows he's probably he'd be laughing.
Come on, Joe.
He's totally a listener. He'd be laughing because he knows I'm right about that kind of stuff. He'll be humble about it, but he understands that. So I did, when I got done with the beer mile, you know, I drank another beer. I had food. I had all that stuff. Didn't puke, whatever. It's done. Video gets put out there. And then I had to run again. I was like, all right, well, what's next? I did it. What's the next project, right? So I had gotten to know the dudes at Runology. At the time, it was Alex and Brent. They were the co-owners of Runology when it was on Hillsborough Street in downtown Raleigh. Now that's just the expanded state of beer. And I got to know those dudes, you know, because they fitted me for shoes and all that stuff, trying to support local, all that stuff. And they have this run series. And the next one that was up, because I missed the spring one, was this 4th of July 4-miler at Dorothea Dix. I went, okay, I know if I'm going to keep doing this, I have to give myself the next goal. Or you know what? The way I put it is there's a race. I don't care if it's a 5K or a 10K, 4-mile, 8-mile, whatever. There's a race. I don't want to embarrass myself. Let me at least stay in some relative run shape to do this. So I did the 4-mile, which again was another humbling experience. It's, you know, I think they ran the race at like 8:30 in the morning and it's already 85 some odd degrees, typical North Carolina humidity. Again, another humbling experience, but I did it in, I want to say I did it like just over 40 minutes. My buddy Adam ran that race. That dude's doing it like in, you know, 20, like just under 30 minutes or whatever it is. He's a pretty legitimate runner. But you know, he was encouraging. He's like, look, man, you just literally started running January
absolutely.
Of this year. I've been running since, I think, you know, since high school, whatever it is. And he's run marathons and all that stuff. And then the following one was, there was a race that September. And then the bigger one was the Trophy Trot, the 10K that goes, again, they're all at Dorothea Dix.
Yeah.
And the goal for that 10K was to do it under an hour, which I did. I think I did it in like 58 minutes or something
awesome.
Like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
So again, it kept doing that thing. I'm like, okay, well, what's the next thing? What's the next
yeah,
thing? What's the next
thing? It's got thing? You hooked now.
Yeah. So that's, and again, for people who might not be runners or like, well, how do I get into running? I mean, that's how I got into it. It was just a very simple, you know, don't try to do this thing like I'm going to run a half marathon or, you know, whatever it is. Like, no, do the small things. And they end up, what ends up happening is, especially like with the ones that I run at Dorothea Dix, there's like the same community that shows up for them. So you start seeing similar people and you might get to know them. You know, maybe you join a run club. There's a social aspect of it that might work for you. That doesn't work for me. That's a separate conversation we can have about people who just like running on their own. I usually put my headphones in. I listen to music. You know, my friend Anita tried to get me to run with her group one morning in downtown Raleigh. And it's like all these people chatting. And I'm like, I like stop.
Yeah, see, that's us. That's like, how this stop. Podcast that's got how it born. All
started
yeah.
here.
Well, Ben, and I know you like there's, running with us. And I know there's like a, there's a training aspect to that. Talking while running helps and yada, yada, yada. I like to rap along, you know, like I'll rap to myself. I don't need to be talking to somebody. I like to be lost in my own thing when I run. That's how I do it. So, I got to that 10K, and then the following year I did the beer mile again. But I did the 2-man relay with Alec Campbell, our producer. And now Alec,
also CrossFit bro. Sorry, Alec.
So he's a CrossFit bro, and Alec kind of cracked me up. And look, it's something that I own. He was under the impression that I was wholly unathletic, which is not true. I was at one point, although as my dad likes to say, then I discovered girls and food and that was the end of it. So Alec, I think, he's like, yeah, I'll do it. If you could do it, I can do it, right? And I did get a level of satisfaction when we did the beer mile. We crushed it. I think we finished in the two-man relay. I think we finished in the top three or four, something like that. In that section, but he puked. And I was like, he's like, how do you do, dude, respect, man. Like, I don't even know how you did this. And I was like, part of it's iron stomach. And the other thing is, yeah, I've done this before. So
yeah, I think the beer, the mile would not be an issue. It would be, cause I'm actually doing the Sir Walter Miler pop-up mile next week at Meredith College.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we've been chatting with those guys, probably have them on at some point.
Pat and all those guys.
Yeah, Pat and Sandy. So we had been messaging about coming on the show, and I was like, hey, maybe I'll come out and do a pop-up mile.
Okay.
So, you know, max effort mile for the first time in 20 some odd years.
So this is your Walter Miler, is you're going as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to go there's just no four? Beer.
No beer.
No.
But there's going to be some pro. There's going to be some pros.
There's some pros who show up to that.
Well, it's not the Sir Walter Miler
proper.
It's not
the actual Miler. Yeah.
So they have two races. They have a 5:30 or slower and then a 5:30 or faster.
Yeah, I'll be in the slower.
Yeah. So will I. I mean, honestly.
A 5:30 or slower?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So that there'll be like a 5:31 guy.
It's an expected. So
like, Joe goes out there and he's like, "Hey, you know what? I want to do this."
I did
and
this then in 8 minutes.
Yeah. You know, and then I got a guy who's doing it in 5.5.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll be happy with sub-6. Okay. Know, I'll be okay with that. You know. So we'll see.
But. So the next actual big challenge was the Krispy Kreme challenge. So again, in order to motivate myself, I had to do dumb crap. So first it was the beer mile, and then it was the Krispy Kreme challenge.
And that gets a lot of attention too. Nationwide. I remember in Indianapolis, they always talk about the one here in Raleigh.
So the trick there was, could I run fast enough to make up for the slowing down of the eating of donuts? Because my brother did this. I have a brother who's 16 years younger than me. And before he graduated, actually it was just after he graduated from NC State, he did the Krispy Kreme challenge. And I showed up, you know, for support, took some pictures and all that stuff. And I saw him struggle. It also happened to be it was below freezing that day.
What's the Krispy Kreme challenge?
So the Krispy Kreme challenge starts at the bell tower on Hillsborough Street on NC State's campus. And you got to run down Hillsborough Street towards downtown, and eventually you do some winding and you end up on P Street. And then that takes you down to, not P Street. It takes you to the Krispy Kreme on P Street. And it's 2.5 miles there, 2.5 miles back. When you get to the Krispy Kreme, you have 12 donuts that you have to eat, just straight up glazed donuts. Now, If you are a super donor to the fundraiser for the Krispy Kreme challenge, I think they cap it at like 12 for 12 donuts. So they cap it at 12. If you give enough money, you will actually get hot off the press donuts. Okay. And if you're familiar with Krispy Kreme glazed donuts, those things are like cotton candy. They will melt in your mouth. Okay. The ones that are not hot off the press can get a little squishy, you know?
Yeah. That's actually how I prefer mine, though. I don't like them the hot now side. Not my thing.
So I can go either way. I just don't like glazed. Like, I just give me a chocolate donut, like that kind of stuff. But they do the glazed. My brother did it. I saw him struggle. And it was also below freezing that day. And those donuts had been sitting out there. And he had to, like, dunk them in water. And it was bad. He had to soften them up, right? But he didn't do it in under an hour. You have to do it under an hour. So that was my little brotherly competition. I'm like, psh, I can do that. He's like, you're gonna feel bad. You're gonna puke. I'm like, nah, I got this. So ended up doing it in January 2020 is when I did it, actually. Getting there was not a problem. Eating the donuts turned out, I was surprised at myself. Eating the donuts was not a problem because what I ended up doing was taking 3 at a time and smushing them together.
Wow.
Yeah. So I took 3 at a time, smushed them together, and my kids were there, so they were running off getting water, not to dunk the donuts, but I had to like wash it down. I was good, right? Ate all the donuts in a decent amount of time. They had no more water. My wife had coffee. But my wife likes having coffee with like sugar and cream in it. I drink my coffee black. So I'm sitting here thinking, like not thinking, like I'm just in this mode of gotta get going. I gotta cut the sweetness. The sweetness is killing me, right? Because a lot of my weight loss has to do with having cut a lot of sugar out of my diet. So like eating donuts is not a usual thing for me. But as I like to joke, Fat Joe still lives inside. Fat Joe never went away. Like, if I need to, I can dig deep and Fat Joe will come out. So it was a Fat Joe moment. I'm having this stuff. I'm good, but I needed to cut the sweetness. That was the one thing I didn't factor for. And I look at my wife and I was like, honey, I need, can I have some coffee? She's like, yeah, here. And I took a sip of it. I'm like, gah, because it was, it had the sugar and the cream in it. I was like, that was not what I was expecting. It was sweet and it made it worse. That was it. It wasn't the donuts.
It just coats everything.
It coated everything. Point, it wasn't the donuts. It made me feel terrible. So I had to power through that. And it was probably the first quarter mile of running with a full stomach of a dozen donuts that was the most difficult. And then something strange happens. Like, all that sugar just starts to give you like that high. It gives you that buzz. And I actually had a relatively easy final 2 miles. And I want to say I did it in like, 56 or 57 minutes. So that was it. So all of this is to get to the long-winded story of getting to the Dorothea Dix 5K in March of 2020. And I used this one as a, all right, let me see how hard I can go. Like, I've been running now for 2 years. I'm probably in my best quote-unquote running shape as I'm approaching 41. Let me see how fast I can go. And I felt great. Honestly, like, I felt I did it. I exerted myself. I ran my fastest 5K. Then the pandemic hits. With no goals, no races, yeah, the virtual stuff. The virtual stuff, no. Couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't do it. I tried the flatten the curve 19K, which I think is like 12 whatever miles. I did that around my neighborhood. I ran, walked it. You know, I did it. My left knee hasn't been the same since, but that's another story altogether. But I just,
did you say 19K?
Yeah, 19K. Wow. So, and again, I ran and walked that. I could not run the whole thing. So
not yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I joked about a half marathon. That might be the next thing I do. But this is what I discovered in the pandemic. Without the races, I fell off. Like, I had nothing to use as a marker. There was no milestone. There was no test. None of that stuff. I was like, I had nothing to drive me to do it. I still got out there from time to time, but I could check my Garmin and be like, oh, it's been 2 weeks since you ran. You went 3 weeks. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, oh, let me get back out there. And so the 5Ks have come back. Runology started their races again. They just did the Run for Love 5K at Dorothea Dix as this past Saturday of this recording. And from where I was in March of 2020 to where I was in June of this year, I did it in just under 31 minutes, which I was kind of proud of myself that I didn't, like, I've gained weight. I haven't been running as much, but I was still able to do this in a relatively decent amount of time.
Sure.
I beat Cam Ward, former Carolina Hurricanes goalie. So he did it in 36
really?
Minutes.
Really?
Wow.
Very nice.
So I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it. Shout out to Cam Ward. So that's where I'm at right now. It's like, okay, the races are back. I can try to get myself back into more decent running shape and hopefully whatever arthritic knee problem I'm dealing with doesn't get too bad. So,
well, yeah, I mean, and that's, it was really hard. I know.
I thought I had fresh knees having not run for so long. I had no tread on the tire. I had tread on the tire, man. What's going on? I don't understand.
You know, we, and it's funny because we've throughout the course of this podcast, we've talked to people from various places in the running world, mm-hmm. whether it was, you know, Thomas from Believe in the Run, they do shoe reviews and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He was someone who started running later in life. And, you know, that was kind of one of the things that he said was, you know, one thing that I've noticed about, because they have a podcast as well. One thing I've noticed about speaking to some of these runners that either took some time off, significant time off from their career or got started later in life for various reasons, whether it was health or weight or whatever, you know, they don't have the pressures of these old PRs and stuff like that that they had from back when they were in their quote unquote athletic prime.
Sure, sure.
So now they're just kind of running free and it helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's something that I've been dealing with coming back to the sport after like a 20-year hiatus. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I understand that I can't run a sub 17 5K anymore like I could when I was, you know, 17, 18
sure.
or whatever. But, you know, you just kind of have to adapt. So, I mean, you have so much going on. And one of the things that we do talk about here is kind of the balance of being a dad, which you are. You've got two kids, right?
Yeah, I have a 10 and a 13 year old.
Yeah, and a busy career. So you've got the OG with Joe Giglio, you know, from what, 3 to 6, right?
Yeah, technically 3 to 6:30.
Okay.
Don't tell anybody that the 6 to 6:30 is recorded.
Okay. Don't tell anybody. 3 to 6:30 every day.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the 919 Beer Podcast. You've got the Panic Room with Brownlow. Mm-hmm. What's up, Brownlow? I'm a big fan. I couldn't get through this podcast without that. But, you know, so you've got all these different projects and you're a runner and you're training for these things. Now that you have races to train for again, how have you kind of found that balance to keep doing that?
It has to happen in the morning for me. I'm not an evening runner. So typically it's take the
Are you even a morning person?
Well, yeah, I'm mostly a morning person. Like I'm usually the first one up in the house. I'm the one taking the 13-year-old to school at, for whatever, 7:30 bell, first bell or all that stuff in middle school. So typically on the days that I know I'm going to run, it's, you know, wake up, have my coffee, all that stuff, you know, maybe save some stories that I want to get to later in the day that I know I'm going to talk about some stuff. I get back, I have some water, maybe dawdle around and look at my phone some more. And then I have to like put myself in that, like, okay, if I'm going to run, I got to do it now, you know? And, you know, like typically during the week, I try to run at least 3 miles. All right. That's at this point, it's like, if I don't do 3 miles, I feel like I haven't really done anything. Right.
Now, is this a week or a day?
This is in a day.
Okay.
In a day. If I run two or three times a week, I feel like I've accomplished something, you know, like I'll get something out of it. So I'll try to run at least 3 miles when I run 2 or 3 times during the weekdays. If the schedule allows on a Saturday, because I get bored running in my neighborhood, I will find somewhere else to run. NC Art Museum, Dorothy at Dix, maybe Umstead, whatever it is. If I have time to do that sort of stuff. I haven't gotten so technical that I'm going to try trail running or anything like that. It has to be paved. Maybe one day I'll try trail running. But right now it's just basically, does it have a nice long paved trail that gives me something different to look at when I go run? All right, I'll go do that. So that's how it has to happen in the morning. If it gets past 9 o'clock and I have not exited the house to go run, it ain't happening.
Especially this time of year.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't mind running in the heat.
I guess as a Florida guy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. The sweating makes me feel alive. I don't know. There's something...
You feel like, you know what? I'm shedding the fat. I'll tell you, for me right now, that's definitely the case. I'm like, all right, I can see the fat coming
out. Yeah, or I can see the beer oozing out of my pores. That sort of stuff. Like I'm sweating out all the alcohol, right? So that's like, I don't mind the sweat. It actually took me longer to get acclimated to running in the winter because my lungs would freaking hurt.
Yeah.
And then I got used to that. Now, which one do I prefer? I actually prefer running in the winter now. Because I've gotten to the point where I used to bundle up, cause I was so cold. Now I can go out there and, you know, 40 degrees, no leggings, just shorts and a windbreaker. And I'm good. Cause I know I'm going to get hot.
Yeah. Once you learn that, basically at whatever the temperature is outside, you add 15 to 20 degrees and that's what you dress for.
That's what I'm dressed for. Yeah. So I'm dressing like it's going to be 60 degrees. So that's why it's just a you know, like a Uniqlo heat tech shirt, a windbreaker, shorts, I'm good to go. I used to be out there in like the leggings, the shorts. I had like a long sleeve heat tech thing underneath. I had all that stuff, a hat, all that crap. But I've gotten over that. Yeah, well, that's what I learned the hard way. It would be bad. I would overheat myself. So that's typically how it goes. But, you know, like, with most things, it's a, with the kids and my job, it was difficult earlier because the show used to go to 7 o'clock and that hour difference is huge. You know, getting home at 7:15 in the evening versus 6:15 in the evening, I can actually have dinner with Kelly and the kids, that kind of stuff. Whereas before they had already eaten dinner. I mean, they're kids, like they want to eat. They want their early bird special. They're not going to wait till 7:30 to eat.
Sure.
And then besides at that point, they were going to go to bed at 8:30, 9 o'clock anyway. So it didn't make any sense. So big push was to reduce the show time until 6 o'clock, especially with all the other things that we do. And then that's been a big benefit to spend more time with the kids and all that stuff. You know, during a normal sports season, it used to be I would go to football games on Saturdays and you could be gone all day. During the basketball season, you know, you've got a random Tuesday ACC game that you want to go see. So, you know, there's some times where I don't come home that evening and they're already in bed by the time I get home. So that's it. But the kids get it. Like, the kids know what I do for a living. Like, it's not, like, to them, that's what they know. And I also, as I pointed out to them, it's like, I also know people in this industry where they're like, especially if you're play-by-play, if you're a play-by-play person,
oh, yeah,
you're never home. So there's only so much lamenting I can do. The only real lament is because of my job, and we go to the Final Four a lot for Radio Row. My older son's birthday is on April 1st. So it's like, you know, I'm usually out of town. So I've missed a few birthdays and stuff like that, but we make it up. I mean, the one thing that, I don't think it was born out of running, but it definitely doesn't hurt, is that most of our family vacations end up being like going to a national park, going somewhere outdoorsy, you know, and they enjoy that kind of stuff. They don't want to run. I've tried to get them to run with me. They have nothing to do with that. Especially my older son, who, you know, he didn't want to do soccer, didn't want to do baseball. I'm like, well, like, there's got to be something athletic that you don't mind doing. And he's built like a runner. That's the thing. I'm not, okay? Like, I got stumpy legs, T-Rex arms. I am not built like a runner. So, like, when I've tried to put stuff on, like, it's a running joke with the dudes at Runology. It's like, they're wearing these things that are clearly built for, like, lanky running guys. And I put it on, and it's like...
You mean like the small shorts?
Like all that stuff.
You're not wearing those?
No. Actually, they they came out with the singlet. One day, I'm like, you're never going to see me in one of those. Like, it would look ridiculous. Plus, I'm like hairier than they are. It's ridiculous. So it's not a good look. But my older son is built that way. So it's like, dude, you're built to run, man. Like, come on. But he's got no interest in that kind of stuff, which is fine. And then my younger son's into hockey. And he's actually taken interest to running sprints because he knows that's what hockey players do. So he's wanted to be like, hey, you know, can you take me to the track? His big thing is getting on a bike, to keep up, you know, to get the stamina and everything else. But he's also been interested in like, okay, well, I know they run sprints. So should I go run sprints? I'm like, well, depends on how serious you want to be. I can take you out to the track and we can do that kind of stuff. But my thing with kids in sports, I never wanted to be the dad that forced them to do it. I've always told them, if you are interested in X, let us know. And then we will do what we can to provide you an opportunity to do this. If you like it, great. If you don't, we'll complete the year. But when you're done, you don't have to go back and do it. So that's how they dabbled in soccer. That's how they dabbled in baseball. Eventually, my younger son, he wanted to play hockey, but he didn't want to skate. It's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, that's a pretty vital component. Yeah, like
you kind of need to learn how to ice skate. And the Canes do a really incredible job with the Learn to Skate program, the Learn to Play. And it's heavily subsidized. So for $250, you get all the equipment.
Oh, wow. Because I was going to say, hockey is expensive.
And they know that. And that's why they subsidize it heavily. And for $200, I think it's $250 last time I checked it. They might have raised the price a smidge, but even still, you could do that. You get the 9 lessons. It's, you know, over 8 to 9 weeks in the summertime. And he came off the ice in tears because he had such a hard time skating, but he stuck with it. You know, he's in tears. He's like, do you want to keep doing this? He's like, yes, you know, I want to keep doing this. By the end of it, he was absolutely all in. He wanted to sign up for house league, all that stuff. You know, and if it didn't work out, you could probably sell that hockey equipment play it against sports and make money.
Yeah, for sure.
Off of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Take notes, USA Triathlon. Talk about an expensive sport.
Good yeah, grief. I could see that. But the point is with my kids, it's that while they know that, like I've always wanted to make sure that, yes, I talk about sports for a living. If you guys are not into sports, I am not going to get insulted by that. So like my older son, you know, I've got ESPN on most of the day and he has like some working knowledge because it's on, right? And, you know, like he'll walk into the house and, you know, he'll walk out of his room waking up and I've got Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin on the TV. And he's like, are they talking about Aaron Rodgers again?
Every day.
Every day, right. Yeah. He's like, you know, like he has that kind of knowledge of sports. But when it comes to wanting to go to sporting events or, you know, sitting there on a Sunday and watching the NFL, like, he's got zero interest in this stuff. And that's, and but that's fun. That's what I explained to him. Like, that's perfectly cool. It's not that big of a deal. Same thing with my younger son who's into hockey, in that he's just now getting around to liking watching hockey. He just wanted to play it. He didn't want to watch it. He wanted to play it. But I think after doing a year of House League, he started to take interest in watching it because he's like, oh, okay, well, they're doing a lot of things that I was doing. Oh, and they're really good at it. So he's kind of come around on that sort of stuff. But, you know, if he's not begging us to go to a hockey game.
Yeah.
You know, he's not, you know, when the Hurricanes just wrapped up their playoff series against Tampa Bay, it wasn't like, hey, it's Tuesday night, the Canes are on. He's like, hey, why isn't the game on? Like, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, the Canes are playing. Cool. Let me know who wins.
Yeah.
He wants to play it. And again, it's all about making sure that if they're into it or they want to try it, by all means, they're going to try it. And I've had those conversations with my older son about, you know, he's wondered out loud, like, oh, why is this person like better than, like, why are they so good at basketball or something like that? I'm like, well, like we had a neighbor kid who every freaking day was in his driveway playing basketball. He's like, why does he do that? I'm like, well, because he's into basketball. He wants to get better at it. That's the only way you're going to do it. You need to do reps. He's like, oh, no. It's like, I don't like it that much. I'm like, that's fine. Go find your thing. Of course, now it's all video games all the time. Now, this was a more difficult conversation to have with him because of what I do, right? Because I'm constantly in a position of marketing what I do. So, and I'm also, we're all old enough to remember that when we played video games as a kid, there was no future in playing video games, right? Like, well, you know, what are you going to do with your life if you're playing video games? You tell that to me in 1992, I don't know what to tell you. Because it wasn't like I was going to go make games. You know, it wasn't like I was a programmer, right? I just like playing video games. Go to now, well, you can be a streamer. You can do all sorts of stuff playing video games. You can enter into tournaments and that kind of stuff. And I started having that conversation with my older son about, well, look, if you're super serious into playing these games, you know, we can start to get you to stream. And then he's like, well, why would I want to do that? And I was like, well, because you can make money. Like, this, like, let's find something that you can monetize here, right? And I remember he had this epiphany when, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this kid toy reviewer, like Ryan's World or something like that.
Yes, my five-year-old, the one that you did not see, who's okay. In bed nonstop.
Into Ryan's World, okay.
Oh, into Ryan's World.
I was not familiar with this individual. So
it's insane.
So we're in Target, and they've got this display with Ryan. He's got some like Ryan-approved toy or whatever. And I hear my kids making fun of it. Like, hey, it's Ryan's World or whatever. And I'm like, oh, so you know this thing? Like, what is this guy? He's like, well, it's like the dumbest thing. He just like opens up toys and he reviews it. And I said to him, well, why do you think that's dumb? He's like, well, who wants to watch that? And I go, well, clearly people do because he's been able to, well, I said, his parents have been able to turn this into this small business, right? And I was like, do you think he's just doing this now for fun? He goes, well, what do you mean? I'm like, he's making money off of this. Like, no way. Like, how? Like, yes. Like, this is now a monetized thing. And I showed him how it all worked. So this extended to a conversation about playing video games. And I said, look, if you want to keep it a hobby, keep it a hobby. That's fine. I got no knock. Like, that's fine. But if this is something you truly want to pursue, well, guess what your father does for a living? Like, we can get you a mic. I can get you a camera. Like, right? Like, you need to get on social media? I can set that up, right? Because, again, this is another one of those things where my older son thinks social media is dumb. Like, he's the one 13-year-old who doesn't care about TikTok. He does not care about any social media at all. He sees people doing TikToks, and he wants to roast them. So somewhere along the lines is something he just is not into. But I had to explain to him, like, you might make fun of that, but those are the tools that get you to eyeballs.
Absolutely. And okay. You're super engaged on social media. Yeah.
And I have to be. It's like, that's what I've told him. He's like, well, you tweet all day. I'm like, it's not because I want to tweet all day. It's work. Right. So the lesson there, again, I'm bringing up this story as an example of, hey, let's dabble in this to see if it sticks. So before the pandemic, my guy Jatovi, who's the PA announcer for the Bulls, he runs esports events in the Triangle, and they had a Super Smash Brothers tournament and a Fortnite tournament.
Good.
And
we're in the backyard of the creators of Fortnite.
That's right. I don't know if you see Cliffy B's orange Lamborghini going around town from time
to time. I've
seen it. Yeah. it's hard to miss. Yes. So he wanted to enter the Smash Brothers tournament. He's like, I'm pretty good at Smash Brothers. I'm like, buddy. It's like, we're signing this up for you. We're signing you up because this is going to be a lesson for you. You might think you're good at Smash Brothers. Not like these dudes. And the first round, he's paired up with this Duke student who we've actually done a profile on. And he was doing the Smash Brothers tournament just as like for reps. That's all, like, it was just reps for him.
And how old is your son?
13. He was 12 at this point.
Going up against a Duke student.
Going up against a professional.
Professional gamer.
Professional gamer.
Okay.
But I'm glad he did it. Like, again, this was the example of like, this is the level. Okay. So you might think X, this is the level. And I give the Duke guy a lot of credit because he sits down and my son sits down and he looks at me and he goes, he just kind of does one of these nods and he looks back at me. And I'm like, I just do a shoulder shrug. I was like, look, man, he wanted to enter the tournament. It is what it is. He's like, it's all good. So the way the setup was, you get three rounds, right? And he's like toying with my son with the character that I forgot who he chose. And my son was Samus, because he thought he was really, really good with Samus. He gets just destroyed. He let him win the second one because it wasn't to him. He knows he can beat my son. And then the third one, he just wrapped it up right there. And he puts the controller down and he just looks at me. He goes, I didn't know you could even do that stuff. Right?
Yeah.
But, and again, that's just another example of when it comes to my kids and sports or any sort of competition, it's like, cool, we're going to try it, but you understand that you're not at that level yet. But this is what you have to do to get to that level.
You have to work to get there.
If you're interested in doing that, well, then here are the things that we're going to have to do. And that then gets to my younger son with hockey, in that he was hell-bent on joining House League. He was going to do it. The pandemic hits. There's no House League, but they do these scrimmages. And he just completed his first season of 10U House. And he had a great time, and he worked at it. And one of the games, they had to go up against one of the Junior Canes teams, right? Like, this is the, we're at the weight competition center. It was like a scene out of freaking Mighty Ducks, right? It's like, it's the nice new facility with the best ice in the Triangle. I mean, they've got a pregame warm-up soundtrack that's like straight out of PNC Arena.
Full Adidas gear.
Like, yeah, he's wearing like the standard issue Polar Ice House League gear. And then here's this Junior Canes team. It was an all-girls squad. It's an all-girls squad. Wow. And they're all sitting on the bench. They're doing like these coordinated cheers and banging on the boards. I mean, it is I think one of the coaches, he had like NC State ice pack gear on. Like, this is like, that's what I said to him. Like, look, dude, that's the level. Like, this is what you want to do. This is what you have to be like, right? And I told him, like, look, man, goal today is just get run over slowly. Like, I don't think you guys are going to win, but that doesn't mean you can't make them work for it, right? Just get run over slowly. Damn if they didn't win.
Wow.
They actually won. Because what I've noticed, this is more deeper in the weeds of youth hockey than I thought I'd be getting into here, is that because the girls' junior team played like actual hockey, the flow to the game allowed my son's team to get breakaways. Like, there were passes, there were turnovers. It wasn't like, and we get to the playoffs, standard playoffs, whatever. They lose their first game because the team that they played was like just, I think most people recognize if they've ever done youth soccer, it's like follow the puck. That's all it was. There was no flow. There was nothing. There was no breakaways. There was no clean game. And it just ended up these like dirty goals that ended up happening.
The chaos of it all.
It was the chaos of it all. Yeah. The kids didn't do well with that because just chaos for the kids. Kids
so
falling
systematic.
On each other. Yeah. So it was almost like my son's team fed off the fact that it was a clean game of hockey, and they ended up getting a couple of breakaway chances because of it. And damn it, if they didn't win, it was a tight game, but they won the game. And he was like, "We beat a Junior Canes team." It's like, cool. So you can see, like, you have the ability to compete. but you got to stick with it. Because I said, you could have caught him on a bad day. Because that was another thing I told him too. It was like an 8 o'clock game.
Yeah.
And I say, hey man, this could work out in your favor too, because the other team might be sleepy. Like, they might not be used to an 8 a.m. game or whatever it is. Who knows? Who knows what their situation is? I used body clock as an example because we see this in college football all the time. It's like, yeah, you always bet against a Pac-12 team coming out to the East Coast.
You guys were having this. You guys were having this conversation this week. You and Joe.
Yeah, it's like if you see a Pac-12 team on the East Coast noon kickoff, you bet against that team. I don't care who it is.
Yeah,
because they're playing at 9 o'clock in the morning on their body clock. And
Stanford's playing like a 9 a.m. game or something like that.
And David Shaw, David Shaw, the head coach, has been very, very adamantly against those. I mean, I don't blame him because it puts him at a competitive disadvantage. So that's kind of like my dad sports philosophy on all that stuff. It's like, try it.
So now your son's hooked on hockey.
He's hooked on hockey.
And you have to do like 4 more podcasts to be able to.
Dude.
You got to pick up some additional projects at work to be able to afford the
more Russell Wilson ice podcast.
Time. Yeah.
So he.
We're going to talk about that, by the way.
He had to get a new pair of skates. Okay. And he was on the subsidized skates before. And I go to 5-hole. I'm like, all right, man, he needs to size up. And they're like, well, these are, like, I said, I need for you, because I don't know how into it he's going to be. So I don't want to drop $300 on skates. I told him that straight up. Like, this could be the only season he plays. So I don't need to be spending $300.
Entry level, baby.
Yeah. He goes, well, he's at the last size of the entry level. So that's what it was. And even at like the last size of the entry level, they're still like $130, right? And then you got to get a new stick. And then you got, you know, new helmets and all that stuff. And then there's the cost associated with it too. Because there's only so many sheets of ice in the triangle.
Yep.
And I feel bad for the adult league because like they got to play at 11 o'clock at night. Those beer leagues play at ridiculous times. Unfortunately, with the weight competition center, it only added a net plus one of ice here in the triangle because they removed the rec zone, which used to be the old, this is for the old heads out there, used to be the old Mars bar and club zone. And they turned that where the Canes would practice. But now the Canes are at weight competition center and they're going to turn that into like condos and whatnot. So we're only getting a net plus one of ice. And I mean, the most precious commodity in the triangle is ice. There's just not enough of it. And there's such a booming youth hockey movement because of the Canes and the success and the young players that kids have gravitated towards, you know, the bunch of jerk stuff that the kids all gravitated towards that. Hopefully, you know, as it continues to grow, there will be other sheets of ice out there. And even for other things like, say, curling too. You know, that was one thing my older son, again, another good example of, you want to try it? Let's go try it. And during the Winter Olympics, he got into curling. I mean,
who doesn't watch curling, right? The Olympics?
I love it. I have no idea what's happening.
I'm telling you,
it's the best. I love curling.
It traps you in.
I absolutely love curling. Anyway, so I found the Durham Curling Club, and they have a youth event, right? And like it's their own thing. And I signed him up for like 8 weeks of curling. He was into it. Like, he was legitimately into it. Like, that was the one thing he was into. But it just, the schedule of trying to do curling was too much of a pain in the ass.
I'm sure.
To Durham and all that stuff. So.
Who knew that Durham had a curling club?
Yeah,
That's incredible.
It's all self-sustained. It's like, it is member-supported. They bought the facility. They have their sheets of ice. They have their seasons. They do all that stuff.
Huh.
It's the Triangle Curling Club, and they'll have just like open events. You just show up. They'll give you the basics, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, the ice problem is not just exclusive here to the Triangle. I mean,
that's true.
Before the podcast, I mentioned that I lived up in the DC area for a long time, and you know, it's a similar thing. The Capitals. I'm a big Caps fan. The Caps have had this somewhat recent within the last probably 10 to 12 years or so of success. And you're seeing a very similar thing there that you're seeing here, whereas this hockey is experiencing this boom there.
Yeah.
But there's just nowhere to play.
Yeah.
There's a handful of spots, you know, in the suburbs and things like that.
and they have big tournaments. I'm in food and beverage, so I've been in hotels and things like that. And we had, you know, we would have these hockey teams come down from Canada and all this other stuff that would come down to play in these big tournaments, and they would just fill the hotels for the weekend. But I mean, that was pretty much it. I mean, it was Kettler Iceplex where the Caps practice, that had a couple of rinks, and then there was, you know, one in Loudoun County or whatever. But I mean, it was just always, that was what we always heard, was that ice time is so expensive because it's such a hot commodity.
Yeah, there's just not enough space.
So one of the things I just wanted to just like hit the rewind button, going back to, you know, the running aspect. So it's been awesome to continue to hear, you know, your story and, you know, the Two Dads Run podcast. That's one of the things that we started so that we could relate to other dads that, you know, that had kids that, that possibly wanted to get into sports, but you know, how do you do it the right way? And that's what we've had fun and speaking with a lot of guests. You know, we hear balance, definitely balance, being present in the moment, especially when you're when you're actually juggling multiple positions, like your career, like being the husband, like being the father.
Well, and I also think there's a, I don't think it's a popular opinion, unfortunately. I wish it were, I wish it had more traction, but I do worry that with youth sports, who are you really doing it for?
Exactly.
Are you doing it for the kid or are you doing it for yourself? Are you pouring yourself into this because you've got some bizarre, unfulfilled old jock thing that never happened and you're hoping to live vicariously through your kid? You know, because I see as sports become more and more specialized, number one, that's a problem.
Absolutely.
I don't like the specialization of sports. I grew up having seasons. I played soccer. I played baseball. My parents wouldn't let me play football. I understood why, but I did multiple things, right? I was allowed to have a weekend where I ended up playing street football with my buddies, like that kind of stuff. And I hear this from other parents, and I think to myself, I could never do this. Like, I'm here to support my children, but at the same time, I also have to make sure that I have my own life too. And I hear so many like, oh, I'd like to do this, but ... there's a tournament this weekend in some other town. And I think to myself, who are you doing this for? Is it because you think your kid truly has a future in sports? Like, you are spending all this money to play hockey at the travel level and blow up your entire family's schedule for what exactly? Is it because you truly believe your kid has a future in that sport? Or are there other reasons why this is happening? And what ends up happening, I think, is that one of two things will happen. Actually, yeah, I think one of two things will happen. You're going to burn your kid out, and they're not going to have an appreciation for that sport anymore because they've lived no other aspect of life, because that's all they do, and that's not cool. They don't get to find out other things they like. And then what ends up happening, I actually talked to a parent about this not that long ago. They had regrets. They're like, I now think of all the money that I lit on fire to do this, all the weekends that I could have spent doing something else with my family. And I think that's important. I would rather go to Yellowstone one summer than spend that summer every weekend in a hotel in like somewhere Charlotte or whatever it is. I think that, again, to me, I think that creates better memories for you and your family than this weird, like, gotta keep playing, gotta get in and get in and get in. I'm like, to what end though? When do you stop? When is that, like, when is the line, when does that line of demarcation hit you of, oh, you know what? My kid isn't going to get a scholarship. My kid is not going to be playing in the NHL. What are we doing here? Sometimes I feel like the kid will be the one that will determine that, not you. And we see this in college sports oftentimes where, I mean, I've talked to basketball players where it was really all their dad's doing. Their dad basically determined for them. Oh, no, you're going to play basketball.
Just push them the entire way.
Like, you know what? You're going to be a three-point specialist. I'm going to build this expensive court for you. We're going to be doing these drills all day, et cetera, et cetera. And then it ends for them. Then what? You know?
Yep.
They don't know what's next. Not everybody's a prodigy. You know, not everybody has a Tiger Woods that they're raising or a Williams sister that they're raising. So I think that's one thing that I hope that people kind of take. Hopefully the pandemic did a good job of reminding people, oh, you know, having a lazy weekend's okay. You know, like
exactly.
Just kind of watch, you know, oh, it's Saturday, there's nothing going on. All right, we'll go to the pool today. Or, oh, you know what? I'll watch a movie today. Yeah, it's time to introduce the kids to Die Hard. That's what we're doing today.
Yeah, and I mean, you know? It's a much different, it's a much different
Die Hard. And it's Christmas. Yes, yeah. We're watching it.
It is not a Christmas movie.
As you know, I literally just watched Die Hard with the kids.
Yes. Nice.
It's all part of the process of all right, that's another thing. Like, you're not going to be completely pop culture averse. Like, you're going to have a basic working knowledge of why things are the way they are. I'm probably not a cool dad when it comes to watching movies, because I will be like, okay, we're going to watch Die Hard today. Why Die Hard? Well, a lot of the movies that you might enjoy all have a basis in this movie. That's why it was Die Hard on a bus. That's Speed. It's Die Hard on a boat. That's Under Siege. Yada, yada, yada. We watched Aliens not that long ago.
Wow.
And the reason why I wanted to watch Aliens was because they were playing Halo on the Xbox. And I said, oh, Space Marines. Where did Space Marines come from? Aliens. They thought it was a great movie. Also, with there were so many things that have referenced The Matrix that we watched The Matrix. And like all of a sudden, these things started to like, oh, that's that meme. And that's actually a really depressing thing, is when your kids associate things out of movies that you love as, oh, that's a meme.
Yeah. Well, they'll be pretty well versed in 90s and 2000s culture, I guess.
Yeah,
if nothing else.
In the 80s too. They, you know, we watched,
I mean, trust
like
me,
Ghostbusters,
dude,
and all that stuff.
I've got like 18 and 19 year olds that work for me, mm-hmm. and
I have no clue. That's what I'm trying
it's
to prevent.
No clue. And it's just, you know, it just makes me want to go play in traffic.
I feel like because of everything being readily available to you because of the internet, you have less incentive to actually watch these things. There's two things that go on. There's the paralysis of choice. Like, how many times do you like go to Apple Music and go, what do I want to listen today? And you don't know what to do because there's so many choices, right? And then I think the same thing happens with shows as well. Like, well, why would I watch something that's on TV when there's nothing else to watch? Like, you will discover a movie because it was on a marathon that week and on cable, and it could be an old movie. So I do think, like, at some point in time, like, our generation was probably the last one that had an appreciation for the previous generations, because there was no other way to, like, there was nothing else to watch, right? Like, you could turn on the television, you only had five channels, and that's why you'd see Bewitched episodes. So you had a familiarity with Bewitched. So like WandaVision, right? On Disney Plus. I don't know if you're familiar with that Marvel show.
I haven't watched
it.
Yeah.
I think I read something today where they're no longer doing that anymore. The WandaVision.
I think it was just a one season thing, right? So the whole gimmick of WandaVision is they were making fun of old sitcoms from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. The only reason why I have working knowledge of that stuff is because I watched Nick at Night, or I watched it on syndication on television.
That's a lot of good stuff.
I mean, that's the thing. My kids had no idea. Like, why is this funny to you? I was like, well, because you're making this fun of this show from this time and yada, yada, yada. So I'm sometimes not fun to watch shows with, because I start going into like human Wikipedia, explaining to them why this is what it is. And they're like, okay, we get it.
Yeah, so. As a listener for about 5 years, I can definitely see that happening.
Look, I own it.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're a big Star Wars guy, big tech guy, big culture
they're
guy.
They're into Star Wars. Yeah. They teach me stuff on Star Wars because they're more into the shows.
Okay.
So whereas I liked the movies and I'll read the comics and stuff like that, they're super into Clone Wars and all that stuff, and they've got all that.
So is that like all backstory,
side story, spinoff? Like, for my older son, like Ahsoka Tano from the Clone Wars, like that's his favorite character. And I just go, oh, isn't that the one from the Clone Wars or whatever? And they're like, it's more than that, you know, like all that.
What are you talking about, Dad? Yeah,
exactly.
Finley, who you met not too long ago, the 7-year-old, she's in love with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So we try to, with the kids, not give them too much TV time, but there was one of those weekends where I was like, you know what? We're just gonna be lazy as hell this weekend. And Adrian and I were downstairs watching our shows, and the girls were upstairs playing and watching whatever they wanted to. But we went up, and Finley, I mean, literally, so it probably started around breakfast time. We went up there at lunchtime to just check, make sure they're alive. They didn't choke on anything up there. And Finley was in like deep into Star Wars, like on, I forgot what episode she was on, but she had watched the first one. Cause we were talking about that week, the order. Cause on Disney Plus, when you actually, and I'm probably going way too deep with this, but on Disney Plus, when you click on like the Star Wars section, they actually put it in order for you as far as like how you want to watch it. And she was already on the second one. Like,
no,
wait,
you gotta do.
You want to watch this?
You gotta do machete order. That's the order.
Machete order.
Yeah, something I read about a long time ago. Where you,
which is,
if you're introducing somebody to Star Wars, if you're going to introduce the kids to Star Wars, you go 4 and 5. So that's A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back. That way you get the reveal without that's the impact of the reveal.
Okay.
Because if you watch the first three episodes, 1, 2, and 3, the prequels, well, you know what the deal is, right? You know who Darth Vader is. So what Machete Order argued was, you watch 4 and 5, then you go back. They argue you can just watch Revenge of the Sith, episode 3.
Yeah.
And it pretty much gives you all you really need to know, the dynamics between Obi-Wan and Anakin, right? And then you go back to 6. So it's almost like a Tarantino-esque, like, all right, big reveal, flashback. And then you go back. So
no one's talking about episode 1 at all. Like,
no, their argument is that episodes 1 and 2 are so superfluous.
Yeah.
That if you never watch them, you actually would not miss anything from the movies. Now, if you get into things like Clone Wars and all that stuff, then yes, you need to watch the political machinations of episode 1 and episode 2. And, with the nerd stuff too, like, this is how, I've developed a reputation of, if you want to know about a video game or something like that, I probably have it. So I'm a Nintendo guy.
Oh yeah.
I've always been a Nintendo guy.
Tecmo Bowl guy, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's more so. So like,
it's Tecmo Bowl. Cause I did see that. I did read that somewhere where, 22 years pro Tecmo Bowl.
Oh yeah, it was on the silly bio on Tecmo Super Bowl on WRL Sports Fan.
But what is your classic favorite?
No, so I have all the Nintendo systems. That was always my thing, and it got to a point where I actually started going back and getting things that I wanted as a kid, but I could never get. So like one time at the old Edward McKay bookstore where they would sell on Capitol Boulevard, they also sell video game stuff too. I remember I was checking out, and all of a sudden I look up and I see a Super Scope for the Super Nintendo. I was like, damn, I always wanted a Super Scope. And I said, is that thing for sale? They're like, yeah. And like, we got it all. I'm like, give it to me.
Was that your Take first time money. Having it, though?
That was my first time having it. Man, I always wanted a Super Scope.
That and a trackpad. I always wanted.
Yeah. So, and the thing is, I still have tube televisions in the house because otherwise the Super Scope won't work. Same with the old Nintendo Zapper, too. So, that's always fun. Like introducing the kids to like, oh, you want to see something cool? Let's play Duck Hunt, And they think like, they thought Duck Hunt
was my jam.
They thought that was the coolest damn thing.
Yeah.
So I introduced them to video games through Mario and Nintendo stuff. And, I've always gravitated to the Nintendo games because they're fun and they're light and they're innovative and those types of things. And I fell out of video games for a while after the kids were born. I just didn't have time for it. I remember I went to New York for a Super Bowl. That was the Russell Wilson Super Bowl in 2014. And I went to the Nintendo store in Rockefeller Center because I was thinking, oh, cool, I can buy some like Mario
Basically hoodie. Your Mecca, right?
Yeah, I went in there thinking, I'm like, oh, I'll buy like a Mario hoodie or something like that, something old school, right? And that's when the Wii U had come out. The Wii U was not a very good, it was not a well-received system. But it did have some good games on there, and they had Super Mario 3D World on display. It had just come out, and I was just killing time, and I played it, and I fell in love with it. I'm like, it's bright, it's colorful. I remember jumping, it's Mario. I bought a system when I got back. And that's how I got the kids into video games, through Mario. Of course, they've graduated to, other things. But what's happened is their friends have come to associate the house or whatnot with, oh, you've got the Nintendo stuff. So like my older son had a buddy who was super into Pokemon and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, well, have you ever seen like the original Pokemon? And they're like, no, I've just watched YouTube videos and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, well, I've got Red and Blue and a Game Boy that works if you actually want to try. He's like, what? Like freaked out. Like it was like an actual Pokemon. And then when he went into the office where all this stuff, the home office, that all this stuff is on display, he saw the Virtual Boy, which if you don't remember the Virtual
I don't even know what that is.
So the Virtual Boy was Nintendo's weird 32-bit play when like the PlayStation came out.
So this was way after Game Boy.
So you had the Game Boy and then you had the Game Boy Advance. And then Nintendo's answer to PlayStation and stuff like that was the Virtual Boy. And it was this weird headset that you had to mount on a table. It had a stand, the head mount that you would just crouch and look into. It wasn't like a strap, like a virtual reality set.
Kind of like the vision test of the DMV.
Yes, actually, that's exactly what it was.
Good call.
And they gave you, and you had a little controller that hooked in. And then in order to do the stereoscopic 3D, it was red and black, and it would give you headaches. They even had like a disclaimer saying, like, you shouldn't play this for more than 30 minutes. Like, Nintendo was taking a risk on this thing. It wasn't out for very long. I think they only released like 15 games for this thing. And it was one of two missing things that I ended up acquiring over time. I'm still missing the Rob the Robot for the original Nintendo. I will find one in good working condition at a decent price one day.
Anybody knows where we can find one?
If you can find a Rob the Robot for me, I would be really excited. So anyway, so this kid sees in the corner of his eye, he's like, wait a minute, you actually have a Virtual Boy? And I was like, what do you know about a Virtual Boy, man? And he's like, oh, you know, I've seen it on YouTube. But like, it's just, you know, you get it on the
it's
YouTube.
It's a relic.
Yeah. Right. To him, it was like this historic relic that he'd only see in video. He's like, well, does it work? I go, yeah, it works. You want to try it? He freaked and he tries it out. And he's like, this isn't very good. I go, well, right. That's not the point. The point is to have it. Anyway,
what a letdown.
I took some pictures and I sent it to his parents. And he's like, they're like, like he has talked about that dumb Virtual Boy thing for a while now. So my backyard neighbors also found themselves in that situation where their younger son who's in kindergarten, you know, they didn't have any systems. Like my guy, Rick, like he sold all his stuff like most people do. And I said, I've got that mini NES. Like if you want to introduce him to Mario, like I gave him the mini NES. Of course, what ended up happening is that he's played that thing more so. He's like, yeah, he watches me play Mario. But video games have been a big factor, a good bonding thing with my kids and all that stuff over time. And they've now graduated to PC gaming. Mm-hmm. And like they're going through the usual track of a teenager who wants to get away from the console and play the PC games. I mean, I did the same thing, you know, and that's where they're at right now.
Yeah, I wasn't ever much of a gamer. I was always just, you know, I was one of those that just whatever's season it was from a sport perspective, like that's what I was doing. I was very lucky to have like all boys my age in my neighborhood, so that like that's what we did.
I see. Well, see, I actually ended up learning sports through video games, honestly. Fair. You know, like in, you know, growing up in South Florida, you have no familiarity with hockey.
No. So when I was growing up, hockey was not a thing.
So my introduction to hockey was through EA Sports NHL 93 for the Sega Genesis. You know, 94 is the one that most people talk about because I know the movie Swingers made that one famous, although there's a continuity error in that they make Gretzky's head bleed. You cannot do that in NHL 94. You can only do that in NHL 93. But that's neither here nor there.
Do you have that game?
I do.
Oh, 100% he does.
Yeah, no, I mean, do.
NHL. NHL.
How do you think he knows there's a continuity error?
Yeah, there's a continuity error there. So anyway, so
bad question.
So we recently, you know, in lieu of the outdoor game, we recently had a dumb contest where we had a couple of listeners go out to Carter Finley Stadium and we had NHL 94 on the Carter Finley Jumbotron.
Oh man.
And they had fun with that. That was fun to do. We did a whole promotional bit about that. But no, I learned hockey through that damn video game, you know? Because I mean, at the time it was pretty robust, you know, there's line changes, penalties, icing, all that stuff, right? All the player names are available. So, you know, that's how I got to know Jeremy Roenick. Oh, this guy's badass. All right, cool. Like that's how I got to know these things. And even to a certain extent, you know, playing the NBA games or the NFL games, like especially Madden. I mean, the whole point of Madden was, like actual diagrammed plays that you choose from. They gave you the names and they gave you the formations. I mean, you learn a lot through those video games from back in the day. So that's, you know, as much as I went to sporting events with my dad, you know, going to Miami Hurricanes games, Miami Dolphins games, you know, he would take me to go see, you know, I wasn't a Heat fan, but he would take me to Heat games so I could see players of the time. So like when Michael Jordan came through with the Bulls, all right, we're going to go to a Heat game to see Michael Jordan. Shaq with the Magic, all right, well, that's how I'm going to go see Shaq, that kind of stuff. But, you know, the games got robust enough where you could run set plays, all that stuff. And I learned a lot through playing sports video games. Now I don't play sports video games because I just watch sports all day. Yeah. The last thing I want to do is play a sports video.
See, that's the only video games I ever played.
Were sports,
was sports games.
Yeah, I don't play sports games anymore. I like actually the only sports game I'm going to play here in 2021 is the new Mario Golf. That
would be it. So has doing radio for, especially sports radio, for as long as you have, has that kind of just killed your fandom? Can you enjoy sports from the level of a fan?
No, I can still enjoy sports from the spectacle aspect of it. But I've always enjoyed sports from the spectacle perspective of it. I've never been so enamored with numbers. I want to be entertained. There's one thing that I've always been bothered by when it comes to sports coverage is that we forget at the end of the day that this is entertainment. You know, these guys are performers. In the same way that you would go see a musician perform, you're watching these guys do, and women, do incredible things, right, that we can't do. In the same way that you would go watch a musician do something that we could never do. So that has not left me, right? Like, I entertain me. That's all I give a damn about. But you know, like the feeling it aspect of it, like I'm depressed because my team, like that stuff,
yeah,
does not register with me anymore. Like, the Hurricanes lost. Bummer. It was a disappointing end, given as fun as the season was.
Yeah, but you went pretty hard on them today. Maybe rightfully so.
That's a separate conversation. Yeah. There's a little kid gloves treatment we give the Hurricanes that we wouldn't do to NC State or Carolina or Duke. A lot of it is built into the fact that they're the one professional sports team in town, and it's the one team that we can all get behind, so we kind of treat them differently. But they still are a professional outfit, and if they're about, you know, what they say they're about, well, then
that's very fair.
They came up short.
That's very fair.
So the
would have liked to have seen it closer than a 4-1.
Yeah,
I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but man,
hey, look, they got big boy.
I'm with
yeah,
you.
They got big boy.
Exactly.
And that it happens, right? But like with the Hurricanes, I think the last time I allowed myself to be a fan was when the Carolina Panthers went to the Super Bowl.
That was super fun.
Because that was just a fun freaking season.
Yeah.
Right? Cam Newton has his MVP year. They're doing the dab. I mean, it was a freaking party. And I was invested as a fan because it was fun. And that probably colored how I approached the breakup of that team and how they moved on from Cam Newton, which I did not like. I thought they should have treated Cam with a little bit more respect.
Agree.
But that's another conversation for another day. But that was probably the last time I allowed myself to be a fan because that team was so charming that I couldn't help but I love this team's great. This is so much. I've had this much fun watching football in a long time. But ultimately, what I've always said and what I've said for the better part of 20 years is ultimately I root for the show. You know, give me something interesting to talk about. There's unfortunately a misconception that like I want teams to be bad. No, I don't want teams to be bad. There's an apathy that actually comes into play.
You hate Carolina, just say it.
Right. Well, what's funny is, you know, State fan will tell you that I'm too harsh on NC State and that kind of stuff. You know, I want State to do well because when State does well, it makes everything else interesting. When Carolina went through the last couple basketball seasons, that's not fun. You know, like nobody's engaged. People just check out with that kind of stuff. The Zion year was incredibly fun because the guy was a rock star at Duke. This past season was a slog for any number of reasons.
For both of us. Yeah, I'm a Carolina fan. He's a Duke fan. Okay. So, I mean, it's
a slog, right?
We need each other.
All D1 teams, I think, suffered. And they did. We could talk about that again, but
they did.
Down the road.
No, but anyway, to me, I look at it from the perspective of I root for the show. So if something interesting is going to happen, then that's what I want to happen. Sometimes it ends up being a coaching search. It is what it is. You know, did I want Roy Williams to retire? No, I like Roy. Roy's great. Like, Roy keeps things moving, right? But his retirement was, holy crap, this is like amazing. Like, he actually did this, and we had multiple shows to talk about that stuff. I'm kind of annoyed at Coach K because the dude could have waited until July. Like, I'm in the middle of the freaking Canes playoff run. Like, give me some space, man. Like, this is something we can talk about later, okay? Yeah. And then you drop this on us. Although, of course, I joke that Mike Krzyzewski is a huge Caniac because the Canes are just like, I think when it happened, they had just dropped 2-0.
He was trying to deflect. Right,
he was deflecting. He's like, nah, huge caniac. He is out here trying to take pressure off the team by talking about him. That's, you know, brilliant coaching mind, Mike Krzyzewski. So yeah, I've been doing this long enough that I have pissed off fan bases.
Everyone.
Every single fan base,
yeah.
But over time, I think state fans have actually come around the most in the last decade in that I think they've come to the realization that I talk about state the way they talk about state just with a microphone.
Yeah.
And it was odd to hear somebody say out loud the things that they might say to their friends.
To other state fans only, and
yeah,
that's it.
And, you know, having a level of expectations and not meeting them and that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You can't say that stuff out loud. Like, I can say that about my family. You can't say that about my family.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of thing.
Giglio probably helps a little.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of state fans that don't like Giglio. So, because he feels that he's unfairly critical with his yellow pad stats and stuff like that. And then there was a term with Carolina fans where Carolina fans used to not give a crap what I thought. And then the NCAA investigations happened. And then from that point on, it's been, oh, you know, it's all this other stuff that usually comes along with it. But I know I'm done doing this if I end up having a resentment level towards fans. So that's why I do think occasionally this happens in the business where you forget what it's like to actually attend a sporting event. And with the kids, to tie this back to the parenting thing, you know, I make it a point to take the kids to football games at all the universities just so they get an idea of, oh, you know, when you get to college, this is what you'll do. You know, it's a social event, that kind of stuff. And
27 people at Duke.
Duke's low key actually,
yeah,
a good place to watch a football game. It's cheap too.
Don't hate on Duke.
There was a Duke Carolina football game that I went to that was a pretty entertaining one. I think it was like 28-28 at half a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, Daniel Jones was fun to watch. I mean,
yeah.
Cutcliffe, just to see like who he's coached.
It was funny to me because I ended up getting like general admission tickets for like $10 a pop for that Duke Carolina football game. Anyway, I do think, and I hear this from time to time, where there's like this, well, why didn't you show up to the game? You know, yes, X, Y, Z. It's like, I think we forget. It's a pain in the ass to go to a freaking sporting event.
Yeah.
It's expensive to go to a sporting event. You know, for the Carolina Hurricanes, I told my younger son, who's now kind of gotten into this sort of stuff, I'm like, well, like for, he just turned 10 for his birthday. I was like, what do you want? He's like, I want to go to a playoff game.
Of course you do.
No problem. He had never been to a playoff game. Now, finding tickets is not a problem. Finding cheap tickets is. So, and I think people tend to forget that. It's expensive, you know? And then you get, you know, people get in this attitude of like, well, your building wasn't full. I'm like, do you have, what did I spend on like upper level seats? For the last game, it was the Tuesday night game, the game two.
It was probably $200 a pop.
The upper level seats were, it was $120 a pop.
That's not bad. I mean, I worked at Capital One Arena in DC where the Caps play. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's upper level playoffs. Oh. I mean, you're sitting 250 easy.
Look, I said this on the air. Like, we went to a regular season game after we got vaccinated. It's kind of like a, yay, we're vaccinated, let's go. And this is when they were still at like 4,500 people. And, you know, I sat lower level. I paid just as much to go see a regular season hockey game than I did to go see Justin Timberlake. Now you tell me what's a better value add, you know, Justin Timberlake doing sexy back or a regular season hockey game.
Yeah.
And I think what ends up happening is that we tend to forget that this stuff costs money because I never have to pay for a sporting event if I'm working it. I've been to countless Duke Carolina games. I've never paid for one. I've been to the Super Bowl. I didn't have to pay for it. I mean, to multiple Super Bowls, I have not had to pay for it.
That's pretty cool.
So I think what ends up happening is we end up, in my business, I think we forget the burden that goes on fans and families to go to sporting events. And if they wonder why kids today might not be as enamored with going to sporting events, it's because they've been priced out. And I experience that all the time when I want to take the kids to a sporting event or experience tailgate culture or whatever it is, that, yeah, this might be a thing that we do once or twice a year. It's not.
Oh yeah, dude. You know, I mean,
it's not a thing that I'm going to be doing, you know, season tickets or anything like that.
My dad opened Walnut Creek as the first general manager. I grew up in the concert business. So I have no scale for what concerts cost. I've paid.
Sure,
I can count on one hand how many times I've actually paid to go to a concert. And, you know, working in NFL stadiums and NHL arenas and things like that, same kind of deal. I was always working. Mm. Yeah, so I got to see quite a bit without having to pay for it. So yeah, you really kind of, and even when I did go, I worked for Aramark, so we had a suite.
Yeah.
You just hop up in the suite for the night. So, I mean, you really do, when you're in that world, you don't really appreciate the cost factor that's associated with it. But Joe, I could sit here and talk to you all freaking night, probably go 3 hours like you do on your show. But we want to be respectful of your time. It is getting late, and I know you got a show to do tomorrow as well. It is a school night, but it's a fun school night.
But you know, I want to ask Joe as far as, you know, cause the running concept, cause a lot of people actually, just as far as like over the last week and a half, have been messaging us like, wow, the triathlon talk's great, but you know, we want to hear more about the running talk. And I loved your story. And, you know, the one thing that I really, really, just because I know there's two people that are kind of like in the situation that you were years ago when you were first getting into it, but now there's somewhat of a gravitational pull back into it. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the community, the people that, and you know, like to go run and practice in groups, but when you get to the races and in communities, so can you, just real quick, I want to hear more. I just want you to expand a little bit more on that.
Yeah. Like
what keeps bringing you back? Every time you go further away, well, what keeps bringing you back to the sport?
I mean, for me specifically, it's just making sure that I have some sort of milestone to hit. And that comes in the form of simple races like a 5K or a 10K. When I get to one, and maybe post-pandemic, it makes me appreciate it a little bit more. So like going to Dorothea Dix on this past Saturday for the Run for Love 5K, it was, you know, I'll put it like this. Going to game one of the Nashville series at PNC Arena with, I think it was 12,000, 13,000 people or whatever they added it to. It, like, I got somewhat emotional. Now I'm dead inside. I have like a gray heart. Okay. So it takes a lot for me to like get somewhat emotional. So being in a relatively full PNC arena, people twirling the towels for a game, you know, and yeah, I had not been to a full arena in over a year. The last time I was in a full arena was at the ACC tournament, although that's even pushing it because like a Tuesday ACC tournament is not necessarily full. So you'd actually have to go back to the Duke Carolina game at Cameron at the end of the year for a full building for that experience. I got a little worked like, oh man, like this is impactful, right? I had a similar sensation when I turned the corner to where Healing Transitions is, where they start the races at Dorothea Dix, because a lot of the money that they do goes to various causes, including Healing Transitions, which is a great facility. Seeing over 1,000 people get ready for a race was pretty cool. Like, oh man, like nature is healing, you know? And Alex, who runs Runology, when I got my race stuff the day before, like he was glowing. I was like, we're going to have like about 1,000 people show up to this. Like he was flabbergasted. And it's great because the local business has people involved in that and all that kind of stuff. I think people were just generally happy to just be out there again. And even if they didn't know anybody, it was just cool to be around other people and run these kind of events. And I will say that even though I don't like running in groups when I do a normal run, you do get a benefit of running with a bunch of people in an event like that. I don't know what the effect is called, but it's this thing. It's a thing that happens where you feel like, oh, I'm going to run faster because I'm with this group of people. I mean, it's not drafting necessarily, but yeah, it's
but
like
it's that competitive. I don't want to die
in front of the or embarrass myself.
Yeah, I don't want to embarrass myself. You know, there's a collective boost that you get by running an event like that in a scrum of people. And if you can push past the fact that somebody's pushing a tiny human in a stroller past you, then you're good. That gets me every time.
I respect it. Anytime
I get passed by somebody who's pushing a tiny human in a stroller, I'm like, how? Like, how is this? How are you faster than me? Anyway, so it's also, even though I run by myself, I will see other people that I know. So like that day, like I had run into people that I had not seen in a while. Like I talked to a former coworker from WREL. I ran into a guy that I know from NC State. I actually had run into somebody that I had in the podcast when it was the Runology podcast. Like you just kind of see people that you hadn't really seen in a while. So that's cool. And then you can also kind of feed off the fact that the people who do gather and have a good time and stuff like that, it's cool to see them being happy as well. So that was cool. And that's another reason why I enjoy going to these kind of races. Cause there is a community aspect to it that comes out when you go to these events. Even though I might not be as entrenched in that community, it still does kind of lift your spirits that you're seeing people come together for, in this particular case, for LGBTQ causes, for the Run for Love. You know, you get the t-shirt, you know, it gives to causes here in the Triangle and that kind of stuff. Like all those things, like any number of 5Ks goes to some sort of charity anyway, right? Like most of these races have some sort of fundraising aspect to them. So that's another reason why that's kind of fun to do too, because you know, you're giving back. So I would say that even if you're like me in that you prefer to run by yourself and it's an individual pursuit, you still do get some runoff, so to speak, from all these people that are gathered together to do these things. So I've had fun with it.
Cool. So what's the future hold for you, Joe? What's up on the horizon for you?
Oh boy. So I have people that are trying to talk me into, I know September 30th, I'm going to do the Beer Mile again. So the Beer Mile is going to take place at Bond Brothers on September 30th. The question is whether or not I do it myself or I do it as a part of a relay. I'm trying to get Gilio, our producer, Jonathan Rand, and Brownlow to do the relay with me, do the 4-person relay.
A little 4x4?
Yeah. That's the thing I'd like to do. But I do know that, like in talking with Alex at Runology, they've got some more Dorothea Dix Run events that are going to be taking place. And I'll probably, you know, I know Bond Brothers has like a 5K that's coming up. You know, little things here and there just kind of sign up for and get involved in one way or the other and probably continue my, you know, mixing it up and trying to run other places so I don't get bored running in my neighborhood and that kind of stuff. So.
Cool. What about the shows and the podcasts? What are some of the things that you guys are looking forward to?
I mean, you know, I think this summer will be easier than last summer. So as I joke with Gilio, when you're starting a new radio show with somebody who's never done radio before, he had...
With no sports to talk about.
Right. He actually got the hard part out of the way first. You know, like I explained to him, like you will never do harder radio than you're doing right now. I had to wait 20 years to do this. You get it out of the way. It's like, if you can survive this, man, like...
And hopefully we never have to do it again.
Not at least for another 100 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be the pattern. So I was very much in the like, hey man, if we can get past this, we're good. And it actually will allow us to maybe get away from the nuts and bolts sports talk and do some more fun things and whatnot. Beer podcast is still going on strong. You know, I don't think I'm going to be bringing the Run podcast back, the Runology podcast back. Cause again, that also gets into work-life balance and there's only so many words I can say in a given day. And that's, you know, another and I think honestly what has happened recently, speaking of podcasts, we recently completed it's Gilio's passion project that I had to kind of help put together was this Russell Wilson podcast. It was a 6-episode podcast that kind of went over what happened 10 years ago with him leaving NC State and going to Wisconsin. The problem with doing a successful podcast like that is that management comes to you and goes, great.
Yeah.
What's next?
Do it again.
Yeah.
I was like, what else you got?
Like, there's only so many stories like this. So
can we do like a Rashad McCants or something?
Well, I will say
Shire being the new Duke coach.
I will say that you might like the next podcast. It's not a Duke podcast. Sorry. Might be a more Carolina focused podcast. We're working on the next thing. It's not necessarily going to be a narrative podcast in the same way that the Russell Wilson podcast was, but it was a new challenge. You know that. You know, look, I'll be honest when I say that I was not necessarily enamored with continuing to do radio forever, right? So I was curious about podcasts. The problem with podcasts is you can't make money off them. So I'm going to keep doing what you make money off of, right? Not everybody's Bill Simmons. So But what I enjoyed about the Russell Wilson podcast was it was a different kind of challenge putting a narrative podcast together. It's not like a podcast like this where is really just another form of sports talk. You know, I mean, it's what it is.
Absolutely.
I mean, my favorite joke is, what do you call three dudes with microphones? A podcast. Or no. The joke is, what do you call three dudes talking about stuff? A podcast.
Yeah.
So clearly there's a market for this, but it's not any different than what I do. Right. So the narrative podcast was a different challenge. And now it's about, okay, well, are there other stories that we can kind of do similar justice to? And that's the next thing that we're looking to try. So we'll see. We'll see how that pans out.
Nice. Yeah. It seemed like it was a lot of work. I haven't listened to it yet because
you don't care about Russell Wilson.
Not really. I'll be honest with you.
That's fine. Well, yeah, even though you might not be interested in Russell Wilson, it is actually worth listening to from a, how does somebody end up on a campus? How does recruiting work?
Yeah.
The amount of people that are involved and connections that are made to get somebody on campus will surprise you. And also, like, the what ifs, you know, like Russell Wilson could have ended up at Carolina. And John Bunting, the former football coach at North Carolina, would tell you, like, you know, we had him on campus and we liked what we saw. But, you know, at the time they had Mike Paulus as the quarterback in waiting, which that might bring back some nightmares for people. So it's interesting from the mechanics of recruiting and the personalities that are involved with these decisions to bring guys on campus and who to start, who not to start, and that kind of stuff. So if you can get away from the whole NC State aspect of it, it's an interesting look on how college athletics works. Did I sell you?
Yeah, I will check it out. Done. Because it's like the Ronald Curry, Michael Vick thing, you know?
Yes.
Carolina was going after both, and they leaned more towards Ronald Curry. And I'm like, oh, that was rough.
And how'd that work out, right?
Ronald Curry was fine.
But he was not Michael Vick.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, Joe, thanks again so much. We're going to wrap it up here. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming out and being in person with us.
Yeah.
This is really awesome. After being a loyal listener for 5 years, it was really cool to sit and chat with you for a while. And thanks again. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime.
No, absolutely. No, it's been great. And honestly, looking forward to having you back if you're willing to come back. You know, love the fact that we've been able to just really kind of shoot shit, have a couple beers, and have some good conversations. So well,
let's talk after that half marathon that I may or may not do.
That's when we want to bring you back because people are like, well, if he can do it, I can do it.
I want to hear that story for sure.
But great. So tell everybody where they can find us at.
Yeah, so you guys can find us on social media. We are on Instagram, YouTube, all that good stuff, all at Two Dads Run Podcast. You can also email the show at twodadsrun@gmail.com. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, 5 stars, and on Spotify. So thanks again, guys. Thanks to Eric, as always, our producer, who makes us sound like not idiots. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, everyone.